He covers the Chiefs.
With that, time's yours.
And you're in that place where you're in the playoffs.
He covers the Royals.
Blair, over there in the middle, on the left.
Salvador, just take us through your emotions.
He covers college sports.
But one great thing about the conference tournament, Blair, I think it gives teams hope.
And every now and then, he likes a good laugh.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
He's Blair Kirkhoff of the Kansas City Star on the program.
Yes, indeed. It's time to talk to our man, Blair Kirkhoff, college insider from the Kansas City Star. He joins us here in the program brought to you by our friends at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Blair, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well. I have no complaints as I sit here right now. Nobody would listen if I did. So why bother, really, you know,
Blair? You know, I'd listen. I mean, if we were having a beer or something, I'd listen to your complaints.
Is it for as long as I was paying?
That's right, exactly. As long as it's your tab, I'll listen.
Yeah, as long as it's on my dime.
If you could sit next to a group of people that you hadn't and have a beer and food and just you'd gladly hear some complaints right now, wouldn't you?
Just for the
exchange of just sitting around with someone and going, "What's up? Oh man, this and that," and I'd easily make that trade.
Yeah.
I'd hear every bad story anybody had just to hang out with someone at a bar.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I would. You have no idea how isolated my life is.
You don't even drink.
I'd find something to drink. I'd drink a mule or something.
You know, there is, responsibly having a drink or two does still count as drinking.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I'm sticking up for you, Curtis. Okay. Like you don't even drink.
Yeah, I would drink here and there.
You know, you don't have to be a fall down drunken fool like Lebo for it to constitute drinking. You like that? See what I did there? I put it on Todd.
Switch.
I put it on Todd.
A little switcheroo there. A little M. Night Shyamalan twist.
Yeah, that's what it was. A little bit of a twist. You thought I was going to say me, but no, clearly. I've got it all under control. I will say this, I can see state line from my house.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I don't know about you, Blair. Have your hours changed at all when the stay-at-home orders came and however much social distancing you're doing now?
Starting earlier and ending earlier. You know, with no games. That's
really
changed. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Well, stunningly, Blair, I went the other way. I stay up later and get up later because I watch shows. Like, I've never watched shows. Once, like, SportsCenter was over, my day was done. I'd done all I felt like I needed to do to be prepared. But now I'm like, okay, you know, I still watch Van Pelt, but I don't feel a need to digest every little thing that's out there because there's, you know, so much of it is like, oh, 10 years ago, this game played, and so here's highlights of that. I'm like, nope, I don't need to see that. I watch more shows. But, like, last night, so I got done, I don't know, and I'm not trying to be Gunther Cunningham with, oh, I'm in the office 40 hours a day. But whatever it was after 12, and somebody got pulled over. And I'm like, and it was like one of those where it wasn't like just like, you know, okay, 4 minutes, it was a ticket and they're gone. Like, they were going through the whole checkpoint thing. I'm like, how? Like, how did you get, like, where did you go that you ended up getting pulled over for driving drunk?
So
I was like, aren't you at home? Like, there's an advantage. You're at home. Like, be home. You know,
he got drunk at home and then decided, I need Taco Bell.
That's right. Let's go.
I guess I'm
going for a Mexi melt.
Listen, I do get that. Like, I'm not I love me the Uber. Right. Because, like, OK, hey, let's just we're going to have a couple of drinks in case we have too many. Let's just take an Uber. Right. You know, me and my friends are going, like, nowadays, there's just no reason to risk anything. Right.
No.
But now it is a little harder in the sense that, are you good with whatever car you get in now?
No.
No. Like, I think Uber's got to be getting destroyed in this, aren't they?
Uber and rental cars. Did you see the image?
Yes.
The LA stadiums? Yep. That was stunning. Stunning.
Dodgers, if people haven't seen this, Dodger Stadium and Angel Stadium, whatever it's called now, their entire parking lots are filled with cars. It's all the Los Angeles rental cars that are not being used because no one's traveling. Like, and I never thought of that. Like, I go to the LAX, or I did until this year. We won't be there. But I've been fortunate enough to go 6 consecutive years to Los Angeles for my daughter's competitions. And so, like, we're old hat at, like, how to get a rental car at LAX.
Sure.
And then how to get to the In-N-Out right next to the landing, the runway.
Yep.
There at LAX and watch all the big planes land while we grab an In-N-Out. It's like it's a Petro family tradition when we get to L.A. And, you know, the LAX car rental place, it's pretty good size.
It is. You got to take a bus, right? Got a bus.
Yeah,
over there.
You got to take a bus. But, I mean, it doesn't strike me as big as Phoenix or Vegas is.
Not as long a
but
drive.
But I guess
either.
It is. Yeah, I guess it is. It's just they're all out.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
You know?
They can't just have enough that fills the lot. They would, you know, they have three times their requests that they'd have cars.
Yeah. Oh. Ten times.
Yeah.
I mean, when you consider that they are filling, and I'm sure it's more than just the airport, you know, rental cars. It's all the other rental car spots around town.
The local rental places.
But I mean, I was like, you know, you must drop a car off, and like 45 minutes later, it's going back out in L.A. or something.
Sure.
Like just a massive amount of cars. And there's so many airports. There's John Wayne. There's Ontario John Wayne?
Yes.
Ontario, Burbank, LAX.
Right, LA, Long Beach.
You know.
There's one in Long
Beach.
Yeah,
Long Beach. There's so John many Wayne's different
Orange
airports
County,
there.
Yeah.
Orange County. Oh, no, so that's not Ontario.
Yeah,
that's another
Ontario
one. Orange County
is Riverside, right?
Mm-hmm.
The valley.
Yeah, that was. I saw that, and I was like, oh, my Lord, I didn't even think about that. Like, where do you put all the rental cars when they're not out and in use? I know this. The L.A. economy is hurting from giving me and my minivan a ticket for driving in whatever, like, you know, $20 a month lane I wasn't supposed to be in. They photo ticketed me with.
Oh, man.
Up yours, L.A.
They got
no
you.
Ticket this year.
L.A. is.
Have you driven in L.A. recently, Blair?
Well, I'll tell you, the last time I did, I had one of those like 5:45 a.m. flights after covering a night event. So just on fumes. And I got onto the plane to come home, and the rental car key was still in my pocket. So I get to Kansas City. I go over to the Hertz. You know, I drive over to the Hertz lot and say, "Is there anything that can be done about this?" And they said, "Nope, not a thing." $250 for not returning the key to the rental car. So I'm very careful about that.
Yeah, that's
making sure you leave the key in the car, not in your pocket.
That's irritating. And at 5:45, once you got on the bus to the airport, there was probably no going back because you were cutting it pretty close probably, right?
Right, right. Oh, exactly. I mean, I was the last guy on the plane. And
there are five. There are actually five L.A. airports.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you guys mentioned Long Beach.
Yeah, Burbank, Ontario.
Long Beach.
LAX and John Wayne.
Five. Five small ones. You know, Teterboro. This
Southwest
big.
Goes to all of them.
Yeah.
So. Because I've flown into all of them at some point.
Well, and sometimes Southwest will allow you to see a couple of them in the same trip on the same day. When they cancel your flight out of Burbank and tell you, okay, here's a voucher for a cab to LAX. That's fun.
Sounds
I've done
like that.
That
might have happened to you.
Yeah.
Might
yeah.
have.
It's not someone else.
The good
story.
News was... Yeah, the good news was I think we were flying out of Burbank at 9 a.m., but they made sure that we had plenty of time to enjoy LAX with our 6 p.m. departure from there.
Yeah. Man, if you're going to spend 6 hours somewhere, LAX
is where
you want to do it.
It should be an airport that's been remodeled for the entire 6-year run that I have been going out there.
Oh, absolutely. Especially that first terminal where Southwest is. They've been working on that. I think they finally finished it, but they were working on that forever.
No chance. No way.
It's like freeways around here. You finish one part of it, and before by that time that's done, they're working on the other end that they started on 8 years ago.
It's the painting crew at the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yes.
That paints all the way across and then goes back and starts because of the salt there and everything. That's what they're doing with that terminal. I swear to you.
Petro,
it's 6 years
in
a row.
When I went to my cousin's wedding in 05, they were working on it then. So, yes, yes. It literally is.
Yes.
That's amazing.
At least the one thing I can say about LAX is they have conveniently designed 58 lanes to bottleneck into three at the drop-off section of the airport.
Well, my other favorite part of that airport is when you, you know, because you fly into Terminal 1 and there are six terminals there, when you get on the rental car bus, you only have to make five stops before you get to the rental car place.
The terminal, the line of terminals at LAX is as long as the airport runway at KCI. And as you know, you do land somewhere north of St. Joe and taxi the rest of the way in at KCI. So that should give you an idea of how long you're driving next to the terminal at LAX before you actually leave the grounds and head to the rental car place. I'm not saying it sucks. It just really sucks.
You're just saying.
Yeah. The good news is, you know, you'll have some time to think about it during the hour and 50-minute commute for the 18-mile drive you've got ahead of you.
88 million passengers at LAX in 2019, world's third busiest and the second busiest in the U.S. behind?
Atlanta, right? Atlanta or Chicago.
Yep, Hartsfield-Jackson.
Yes, and believe me, your delays in Atlanta will reflect that.
Well, the other good news is none of us will be flying anytime soon. So plenty of parking, plenty of rental cars, plenty of space at all airports these days.
The busiest in Beijing. Beijing, Atlanta, and L.A. The top three. Tokyo and Dubai, the 4 and 5.
And based upon how the virus works, it seems like all the traffic was going to L.A., you know, from there.
Yeah.
All right, Blair, let's move on, shall we?
Oh, I guess.
Let's talk about drive-thrus. Well, you know what I hate when I go through the drive-thru? You hate that and you realize, oh, my wallet. Do you dive out or let the next guy get your order, or do you just go up there and say, hey, I'm sorry, I forgot? What do you do?
Yeah. Let me know how the I forgot works. You might as well dive out. I don't think they're going to help you out. I think you can pretty much plan on your screwed is the answer there. I want to let you hear a little something. This would be Gene Smith, athletic director at Ohio State. He was on a conference call with the media yesterday. And, Jed, are you ready for that?
I am.
Ohio State AD Gene Smith talked about the possibility of having fans in the stands.
We have played a little bit with the social distancing concept, and we know that probably will take us down south of 30,000 fans in the stands, actually closer to 20 to 22. So we've played with that a little bit as a framework to start.
A sixth, basically, of the overall attendance figure is what they're kind of talking about. Is that worth it, like, to put a sixth in, like, to open it all up and do everything and figure out the bathrooms and the concessions? Is it worth it? Or, I mean, presumably they think it is, because it sounds like that's the direction they're going to go.
Yeah, and think about this. He's not talking about 20 or 22,000 in a couple of sections. That's 20 or 22,000 spread around 110,000 seats. You know, so every corner of the stadium will be used. Just there'll be people will, you know, there won't be anybody within six seats of somebody else. So listen, you know Ohio State football fans, they're no different than LSU football fans, Alabama football fans, Clemson, Kentucky basketball, Kansas basketball. They are, you know, they're just diehard people. And I think that the difficult decision for Gene Smith is how are you going to identify the 20 to 22,000 people? Are they your biggest donors? Will students get a piece of that? Now, I understand what you're saying from a, you know, from a health and safety standpoint, and whether that, you know, that should, you know, should this be the case? I think an Ohio State football fan will just say, you know, I'll do anything to make sure I'm sitting in the horseshoe on a Saturday afternoon, you know, watching my Buckeyes play. So I think they'll, if it ends up being something of a ticket lottery for 20 to 22,000 people, I bet they get hundreds of thousands of requests to be in those seats.
But if you're going to do it, you're doing it for the money, right?
I suppose that's part of it. The money has to be part of it.
So I'm sure.
And atmosphere.
And concessions. I mean, you get money off the concessions, not just the ticket price, but money they spend once they get there.
So
yeah, I'm just thinking though that if they're going to do this, they're going to jack the price up.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Would be a bad look. But
yeah, it certainly would be a bad look.
Why would it? If you know, let's say you had 110,000 regular. Was it 110 or 102,000?
That 102. I'm seeing 102.7.
Okay.
As
so
of last year,
it's one of the handful of six figures.
Yeah. Absolutely. And but if let's say 70,000 of them still want to go, right? I think that's generous, to be honest with you. Maybe it's 50,000. Let's call it 50%. I mean, if they say, yeah, I get it, but whatever it takes, I want to do it. In that supply and demand, I mean, is that really a bad look to charge more? Because the idea of opening it up at all is to generate revenue. So should it be the biggest money?
I wonder if Gene Smith said that or was asked that. I saw the quotes. I didn't know if that was in a press conference setting or a Zoom Q&A maybe with the school's media relations where he wouldn't take questions. But I think that's certainly worth pondering, you know, if you're going to do it. And, you know, we've seen colleges. I don't know if we've seen any at the Power 5 level, but below the Power 5 level, there have been schools that have already dropped sports in the last 2 or 3 months, right?
Yes, since he was soccer.
I've seen a couple baseball programs and some other non-revenue programs have been dropped because of this, because schools cannot, you know, they're just not going to be able to afford to maintain them for next year. So we know that Ohio State's one of the wealthiest of the schools when it comes to revenue and budget, but they're also a school that sponsors just about every sport that the NCAA, you know, has a championship for. They're one of the few that whatever the maximum number of sports there are offered by the NCAA, Ohio State plays them. So it takes a lot of money to keep Ohio State in business, in the athletic business. So that's part of the consideration too. But, you know, he's the first athletic director who I've heard suggest the partial attendance. You've heard, you know, Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma is saying he can't believe they're even, you know, NCAA's allowing schools to open their practice fields on June 1st. So you could tell he's, you know, you kind of see where he's leaning in this. And you've heard some others like Dabo Swinney in the South saying they expect to see full stadiums when college football season starts. So at least I'll give Gene Smith credit. He's given it some thought. I'm sure it was with a lot of consideration that he even made this suggestion of a partial attendance. How it's going to work financially, what it means, I don't know. But it's fair to speculate. Yeah, highest bidder. If you want $1,000 a ticket for an Ohio State game, I bet they could find 20,000 people that'll pay $1,000 a ticket to come see, you know, Nebraska or Michigan or whoever. It's kind of interesting. Will other schools do that? Is that the right thing to do? Is it the, you know, what's Ohio's unemployment? You know, where do they stand?
I think one of the things that has to be done is, you know, and this kind of comes under the, if you don't agree with me wholeheartedly, you're a bad American, right? Or you're nasty or whatever the term might be. You know, I think America needs to grow up and stop being juvenile about every time somebody disagrees with them, it being the end of the world or them being a terrible person.
I disagree.
And I would say this.
I just totally
You're wrong. And here's why.
You're so wrong.
Can't believe you would say that to me in this economy.
I like the in this economy.
That's the easiest punchline ever. Really? In this economy?
In this economy, you're going to say that to me? I said, pass me the salt, man. I mean, you know.
Oh, sorry.
No, but I think, like, listen, for me, I'm not going to a stadium, right? Now, I'm on the much more precautious side. I've said this to people, and I'll wear it freely. Like, I'm most people would consider me over the top in the precautions that I want to take. I'm going to tell you that there might even be some people in my own home that consider me over the top You know, that can be for some fun times, Blair. But, like, so for me, I'm not going to go. But if somebody else wants to go, I don't have the conclusive answer of what's the safest way and what's the fastest way to get this over with. Right? I don't. And so I appreciate that Ohio State is trying, right? I do. It's not for me. For other people, it might be. I just – what worries me is there seems to be this new thing of, like, if you do – you know, I don't want to say take it serious. If you just want to practice social distancing to a extreme degree, the thing that concerns me about stadiums, and one of the reasons why I wouldn't go, is it seems like the people who either don't believe it or just say, hey, I'm not going to do it. You got to live your life, and whatever happens, happens. Whatever their approach is, they seem to feel a need to come get right up next to you if you don't want to live your life that way. And so I'm personally not going to walk into a stadium and give somebody that opportunity.
You know, I've seen the take polls for what, you know, for what you will. But the polling that I've seen is more people are still feeling more cautious about this than not. And that is when they're asked, would you, you know, if there were no gathering restrictions, would you go to a sporting event or a concert? And the majority of people are still saying no to that. So I think that largely public sentiment's on your side on this. And the people who are not going to feel comfortable going to a game or a concert aren't going to risk in their mind, right? They're not going to risk their health and safety by doing that. Now, does that mean someone who's been an in-your-face protester type, you know, is going to, you know, come to a game and sit right next to you if you're practicing social, you want to practice social distancing, you could have, I could see where that would be a problem, could be a problem. You know, so I don't know.
Then you toss that person out. So here's the deal. This, you're going to do this.
Or hand them a mask.
Good luck.
First.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Good luck. But yeah.
Good luck.
Sorry, Karen, you got to move over here.
I mean, one of the reasons why I gave up some tickets that I used to have is because there was constant, you know, standing and shouting in the face of my family.
Can confirm.
And yeah, you were there. And I went and I said, hey, come down and stop this. And I was told, well, we let the majority rule. I'm like, oh, really? Oh,
wow. That's, boy, no problems I okay. can envision from that policy.
Okay. Hmm. All right, then. Well, the majority of people who live off our bank account vote no go on paying this kind of money for this experience. So I'm out. So that, you know, it is. I think it's of note. I think it's going to be, you know, interesting. I hope everybody can be mature and respectful of other people. But we will see. I want to ask you this, Blair, and I'll ask you this, and then you can think about it. And we'll pick it up when we come back. And that is the voluntary. The sports, the men's and women's basketball and the football, voluntarily can come back in June. How voluntarily is that? We'll talk about that next with Blair Kirchhoff from the Kansas City Star with us here in the program.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt. End of the hour answer. What manager holds the Major League career record for ejections? The number is 158.
Is it La Russa?
I was going to go Cornelius McGillicuddy.
Nope.
Because he only managed for 50 years. I figured 158, that's three a year. I don't know.
This guy's way up there in the years. I mean, he's obviously managed a lot.
Well, he has to be somebody who did.
He's in the top five in all-time wins, I believe, at least in games
How
managed.
Earl Weaver?
That's why I said Tony La Russa?
Not La Russa. I would have said yes had it been Tony La Russa.
Bobby Cox.
It is Bobby Cox.
Bobby Cox.
I knew
Cox,
one of them broke it.
79 today. I was looking at his player record. He hit 9 career home runs, but listen to the 5 of the names he had homers off of: Denny McClain, 2-time Cy Young winner; Dave Boswell, 20-game winner; Dave McNally, 4-time 20-game winner; Pat Dobson, 20-game winner; and Jim Cott, 287 career wins and a 4-time 20. He didn't hit.
You know what it sounds like to me?
Off some good pitchers.
You know what it sounds like to me?
This guy sucks. The fastball.
Well, no.
Or just throw one at him and not try to.
As a player, he was a lazy ass. if he can hit the
right,
best,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Oh, get up for the big boys and then what? Just mail it in the rest of the time?
Must be.
That or the big boys, and I think this is probably it. I think this is one of the reasons you see things like that. The big boys don't mess around with the guys that can't really hurt them.
Yeah.
And so they come right at them.
Let's just say Bobby Cox was never part of anybody's scouting report.
They're not wanting to go 11 pitches on Bobby Cox. They're firing in the strike zone saying he's not going to beat me over the wall.
The other fun part, he hit his first and last homer off the same guy, a nondescript White Sox named Gary Peters. And that is all you need to know about
Gary Peters. Gary Peters. Look at his record. Gary, really? I remember his baseball card.
Yeah, 124 and 103. He pitched for 14 seasons. I stand corrected.
Apparently that means nothing to the great Curtis Sewell's career.
If I don't know who he is, he must be a nobody.
Kansas City Barbecue Store.
Another good pitcher he homered off of.
Yeah, there you go. The Kansas City Barbecue Store stocking additional items, including cold barbecue meats from Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. You can take advantage of that right now. They literally have everything for you to stay home and eat at home, grill at home, everything. Grills, sauces, rubs, they have it all. Call in and order and pick it up, 913-782-5171. That's 913-782-5171. Everything you need, the sauces, rubs, grills, fuel, utensils, and even the meat, it's at the Kansas City Barbecue Store. Find them online at thekansascitybbqstore.com, right across the parking lot from Joe's Kansas City, right there at 119th and Stringline Road. It is the Kansas City Barbecue Store. If you're doing more cooking at home, it's grilling season, and literally everything for you. I love getting the grill going. Number one, we have a rule in my house, Blair. Daddy gets some Coronas when he starts to grill. Don't you think that has to be it? Right? It's hot, so a couple Coronas to do some grilling.
How do you grill without the Corona premium?
That's the message I'm trying to send to the world here. But my grill came from the Kansas City Barbecue Store. They do a great, great job. So many great options. Go to thekansascitybbqstore.com today. Blair, optional. Can go back on campus. Optional, June 1. This is a time where I'm sorry. I don't know how to do it. I don't have it all planned out with a plan. But college football, college basketball players, maybe college athletes in general could use a union.
Yeah, no, we've suggested this before, that there is not a uniform standard for this. For the NCAA to say, June 1, you know, the gates are open for the schools, now it's up to the schools. Who is going to, who's going to say no? What school's going to say, what Power 5 school is going to say, no, I don't think so. Let's be cautious here. Not if your rival is open, is that going to happen? So it seems a little too early for me, June 1st. Maybe others would disagree, and I'm just thinking football here. It's the only it's for all sports or all fall sports, but I'm thinking football, and it just seems too early for me.
I think for me the issue is it's optional. We know that they used to have optional off-season workouts in the NFL. And if you didn't make it, you were frowned upon. And it got so bad that it became a negotiating point for the NFLPA that, no, they took away how many workouts you could have because all these – they had all tons and tons of optional workouts that everybody was expected to go to. And now OTAs, no, they're optional. They're like 9 or 12 of them. And then 3 minicamp days. Maybe it's 6. Maybe I'm wrong. And the minicamp days are not optional, but the OTAs are. But still, just to the point, like if you think they're optional, the only people who don't show up are guys making tens of millions of dollars, the guys that are uncuttable. Who didn't show up? Justin Houston didn't show up. Eric Berry didn't show up. Those were the guys who wouldn't show up.
I think Marcus Peters didn't show up 1 year.
Yeah, Marcus Peters wouldn't show up. They were guys that knew they weren't getting cut, and if they were getting cut, there was tens of millions of dollars for the next team to pay them, right? But the Chiefs weren't cutting Justin Houston. So, you know, the idea of it being optional is laughable. If you're a college football player, there's nothing optional about that. If the coach says we're going back to practice, you're going to be there or you're not going to play. And unless you're a guy that's already locked in as a first-round pick for next year, which I saw a guy, I can't remember who it was, somebody, they did their way too early mock draft for the next year for 2020 back in 19. And he said, all right, let's take a look at how I did. He got 16 of the 32 first-round picks right. I think he had 8 of them that went in like the second or third round. That was 24 of them. He had in rounds 4 through 7 were like another 4 of them. And then 4 of them didn't end up coming out. They were juniors that either got hurt or just decided to go back. Like Travis Etienne was one. Another one was the linebacker. Was it Dylan Moses at Alabama who got hurt? You know, that's what it was. So he had a pretty good read on who the big boys were. So only guys that are so good that the team's going to play them no matter what. And in college, there are coaches that won't play them even if they are the best. You know, there's nothing optional about that for a college football player. They're not sitting there going, oh, I'm going to choose not to go because it's okay. I'm going to have my starting spot if I wait till we get to camp in August. They are expected to be there. That's what's, you know, to me, a little bit disturbing about the college athlete.
Yeah, the old captain's practice. You remember they used to call it the captain's practice in the summer. You don't have to be here, but captain sure would like to see you. Working out with us in the summer. That's why I mentioned it earlier. I really like the stance of Lincoln Riley, who doesn't seem to understand why this is happening and thinks it's not safe. I mean, I don't think he's not going to do it. I mean, he's gonna have to do it, but I wonder if a coach like that, if you go read his comments, he was, you know,
oh, I did.
He was really interesting. And I don't know if at Oklahoma, at least that one school and that one example, that we're going to see a coach hold his, you know, players' feet to the fire when it comes to showing up for a, you know, for a June 1 workout or being on campus. And, you know, one of the other reasons for students to be on campus that time was for classes, to take summer school classes, and to get ahead, or and to, you know, when they were taking 12 hours in the fall and 12 more in the spring, they could get the 6 in the summer to, you know, to sort of be on time for graduation. And, you know, I suppose it'll still be online opportunities.
Or Blair, if they were a really good student and academics was their focus, and I have no problem if a kid's focus was football, right? I got none, or basketball. None whatsoever, to each his own. But the ones that were like, hey, I'm using football to get the degree because I'm not going to be a pro football player, but I can play college, they would take 15 during each semester, and then they would load up because it's free summer school as well.
Right.
And they would come out of there with a master's or – you know, well on their way to a doctorate in something else and getting it all paid, and now they can't take advantage of that.
Or have enough credits to be considered a graduate transfer and spend your last, you know, go the Russell Wilson route and go to another school for your, you know, for your senior year, which has become, you know, just so prevalent now in college sports. So, yeah, the whole thing is off its axis, you know, I'm gonna be really curious to follow this story and who's gonna show up and what percentage of kids are gonna show up on June 1st and who's being, you know, kind of hard nosed about it and who's trying to, you know, what kind of safety precautions, because this will be the first time, right, when assuming there's no NFL gatherings until June, you know, for another couple weeks. This will be the first time football teams will have gotten together. You know, it's not like soccer where you can space, you know, the players are spaced out except in competition. This will be the first time that you'll have, I don't know, 50, 60, 70, 80, however many it is, together, and what kind of precautions are taken at that point.
All right, we'll take a break. Vanderbilt hired the 5th female athletic director, the 1st African-American female athletic director. That's a good thing, but we'll talk about why I think college is actually the problem as to why we don't have more African-American and minority head coaches in the National Football League. We'll do that next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are
you?
Actually, no.
They never will.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Mm-hmm. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Coming up in our next hour, Need to Know, Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. And, of course, we wrap it up with the kicker. Blair Kirchhoff is with us right now. Brought to you by our friends at Robert Progdon Buick GMC. Find them online at robertprogdon.com. Blair, here's my theory. First of all, we know how ridiculous the goofiness of moving up six picks for a African-American head coaching hire, 10 picks. For hiring a general manager, getting a – is it a – I think for retaining an African-American quarterback coach after, for going into a second year, you would get a compensatory fourth, I think it was. I can't remember all the details. But anyway, basically bribing themselves – to hire African-American candidates. To me, what strikes me is like they're like, well, there's, you know, I mentioned this the other day, and I was like, well, there aren't enough good candidates. And somebody goes, well, Byron Leftwich is not a good candidate. One does not constitute enough. Okay? Like, yes, Eric Bieniemy and Byron Leftwich are offensive coordinators. Those are two strong candidates. They have the resume to be head coaches. There are 30 whiteys. Okay? That's a disproportionate number. And there are six defensive coordinators by my count. Curtis, did we conclude? Did I miss one? Seven? Was it seven?
I think it was six.
It was six. Okay, six defensive coordinators that are African-American. It does seem to me that there's still the a little bit of, okay, defense, but offense is a specialty. Or it's because predominantly offensive coordinators played quarterback. Which to me, you know, I was thinking about it, and I was, you know, we talked during the season. How about it's Lamar Jackson, and it's Patrick Mahomes, and it's Russell Wilson, and like the top of the quarterback food chain, there's plenty of African-American quarterbacks. Like, hey, boy, we can feel pretty good. You know, Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl, and nowhere was really the topic that an African-American won the Super Bowl.
Right.
Right?
No, absolutely.
And I am aware that his father's African-American and his mother is white. I am aware of that. But, you know, I do think that's progress from the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. But I pose this question, name an African-American backup, particularly now that Teddy Bridgewater is a starter and Tyrod Taylor is a starter. Name an African-American backup quarterback. I'll spot you Jameis Winston. Go.
Well, let's see where Cam Newton lands, too. But no, that you make a good point that's the
clip. I got none.
Clipboard holders? Nope.
And so to me, it's like, now I don't know what that is. I did say that I think there is a cultural phenomenon to this. Like, why would you know, if you're a middling player or you're not middling, you're really good, but maybe just on the fringe of the NFL, you don't think, let me make my decisions based upon getting my coaching career going, right? Kim English did. Kim English bailed on his playing career really early, and now at 31 years old, he's considered one of the top 40 young coaches under 40. That includes guys that are already coaches and guys that are assistants. I know it's a different sport. It's basketball. But there is something to the, you know, you got to go do that. But I think so many players, you know, African-American players, they don't see any African-American coaches. So why would that vision be in their head that this is a route, that I can stay connected to the game I love, and I can go be a coach, when there's so few examples set for them? So I do think there's that cultural phenomenon that is a chicken and the egg, that is a difficult thing for any and all sports or businesses to get over. Listen, we gotta find some guys or gals that are African American to do that, to set the culture and tone that you know, you can achieve this and aspire to this and want to be a vice president here at this company, because as a qualified African American employee that's proven himself, you can be a vice president here. Yeah, you got to get that going. I do get that cultural phenomenon, but I do think that there is still a knock against the quarterbacks, in the sense that, yeah, if you're so electric, like you're Patrick Mahomes, we got a spot for you. But in the NFL, there are hardly any backup African-American quarterbacks, and those are the guys that end up getting the jobs. Doug Peterson, backup quarterback most of his career. Sean Payton, scab and a little bit of backup quarterbacking in his career. Matt Nagy, 1AA quarterback, not good enough to even play in the NFL. Mike Kafka, you know, a cup of coffee in the NFL, he's a quarterback coach. those guys don't exist in the league, and those are largely the biggest percentage of future coaches are backup quarterbacks.
You know, the Chiefs have had a few backup African-American backup quarterbacks, or at least on the roster. Now, I wouldn't say they never – I don't think they ever got to number two, but they had the Ohio State quarterback a few years ago. Gosh, why can't I cannot remember his name. Didn't they have prior Terrell? Did they not have Terrell prior for a little
They
bit?
Brought him in, but I think they released him before
okay.
he ever played.
Yeah, well, yeah, and wasn't there Apprentice?
Yep. Yeah. Listen, Jordan, Clark Hunt Jordan had two Tama of his now, last four or? Coaching. Mm-hmm. Yeah, two of Clark Hunt's last four coaching hires have been African Americans.
Right.
To my Casey Printers.
So I don't
Casey Printers. That's what I was thinking.
Casey Printers.
I just couldn't remember the name.
Miles Prentice, was that his name?
But I know you got on this because of we were talked about it, because Vanderbilt hired an African American woman as an athletic director, which I certainly salute Vanderbilt for doing that. They have an African American head football coach. Derek Mason's still the coach there, right? He hasn't been fired.
Yes,
and he continues to work. You know, it's been a tough go because it's Vanderbilt, but he's still the head coach. And I remember UMKC actually hired an African American woman athletic director. It was about 7 or 8 years ago, Carla Wilson. She lasted about 5 years in the job. So it's rare. It's certainly rare on the college level, and that's where you made a good point about aspiring, African-American athletes and administrators needing to see examples, needing to see models in front offices of colleges, and certainly in the NFL where – there's just so much retreading going on in the NFL when it comes to the coaching ranks.
Yeah, no doubt. Blair, you're never a retread, just so you know.
I just can't remember anybody's name.
Never, neither can I, so that's good. makes it fun for us to sit and guess, and it allows Jed to look smart. Blair, always great talking to you. We'll do it again next week,
Sounds
my friend.
Good.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question, sponsored by Good Sense, chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, three Hall of Fame players have hit for the cycle against the Royals. Name any one of the three. Brought to you by Good Sense.